Okay, thank you all for coming. Welcome to day two of UBS's Global Media and Telecom Conference. I'm John Hodulik, the telecom, cable, and satellite analyst for North America. I'm very pleased to announce our next speaker, John Stephens, the CFO of AT&T. John, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, John. Appreciate it.
So we've got about 50 minutes. I think John is going to lead us with some open remarks, and I have some questions to go through, and then from there we'll turn it over to the audience.
Sounds great. Once again, good morning. Thank you all for being here. Before I start, I always need to cover our safe harbor. Today's comments may contain some forward-looking statements. They're subject to risks. Results may change materially, and details can be found in our SEC filings and our AT&T website. Also, just want to make sure everybody knows, with the AWS auction underway, we are in a quiet period under the rules of the auction, and I won't be able to comment on that. But before we get into the questions, let me give you a couple of insights into how busy our year has been. We made some ambitious plans 2 years ago, our Project VIP investment, and I'll tell you, we've done a terrific job on meeting those objectives. We've hit our LTE deployment of 300 million. We can check the box on that, 300 million pops covered. We've hit our high-speed broadband goal of 57 million customer locations with that potential for that service. And we're also well on our way to taking fiber to 1 million business customer locations. We are at about just over 650,000 right now and on track to finish that. So we are well on our way to completing our VIP initiatives. And with that, as we've announced, we plan to return to more traditional levels of CapEx spending, about 15% of our service revenues, or about $18 billion for next year. Still a lot of money, still $1.5 billion a month, but we are going to get back to more reasonable or more regular, normal levels of CapEx spend. We're also in the process of completing two significant acquisitions, and these will fundamentally shift our business. DirecTV makes us a meaningful player in the linear TV business and puts us in a very solid position with the future of content for both TV and mobile broadband. At the same time, our ability to bundle these services increases dramatically. We'll be able to provide customers choices that they haven't had before, and we're very excited about being able to put together video, wireless, and broadband. We've also announced plans to acquire Mexican wireless company Usacell. This is an excellent time for us to invest in Mexico, thanks to the significant regulatory and constitutional reforms that are underway in that country. It gives us the opportunity to create the first ever North American mobile service area, covering more than 400 million customers, while at the same time get on the ground floor of the mobile broadband deployment in Mexico. We're very excited about this, and we think it's a unique opportunity because of the regulatory reforms that have taken place in Mexico. We continue to operate our business at a very high level, even while making these strategic moves. You can see that clearly in the wireless business. Excuse me. As you are well aware, there are pricing moves almost daily as competitors act and react. It's been that way all year long, and we don't expect things to slow down in this crucial holiday season. But a lot more than pricing matters for our wireless customers. It's also about what you're selling. We're selling a best-in-class nationwide 4G LTE network. And on top of being the nation's most reliable network, our network now has the nation's strongest LTE signal. We continue to believe that being able to compete in this marketplace requires, as an entry fee, a quality network, and we have that. We also deliver an award-winning service, whether you get it in our stores or whether you get it online, and we think that's very important to customers. And we also have to give our customers choice, not only in devices but in pricing plans. The strength of our network and our quality and our customer choices will continue to be key aspects of how we address the market going forward. While this is going on, the current environment is impacting churn. In fact, we expect postpaid churn to be higher than it was in the year ago fourth quarter. But we continue to expect full-year postpaid churn to be one of our best years ever. At the same time, subscriber growth has been strong all year. Total and postpaid net adds have shown year-over-year improvement in every quarter, and we expect that trend to continue in the fourth quarter. All this will impact fourth quarter adjusted wireless margins, but even with this pressure, we expect full-year adjusted wireless service margins to be comparable or better than last year's. Our strong cash flows give us So while this is going on, our strong cash flows give us the ability to continue to invest and make key strategic movements and continue to pay a solid dividend. I might add a dividend that's increased for 30 consecutive years. We do have some big investments coming up. And these investments, USSL, DTV, will push our target of 1.8 net debt to EBITDA range and push us above that. We've been in this situation before and have been able to get back to our targeted debt levels rather effectively. That will be the focus of how we use free cash flow after dividends over the next 3 years. We've also monetized some of our assets, such as our interest in America Mobile, our towers, our Connecticut wireline operations. And in total, we've monetized more than $8 billion in asset sales this year, strengthening our cash position. In fact, this will be the third year in a row when you take free cash flow plus cash from asset sales that we've approached $20 billion of total cash generation. So a significant number. One more quick note before I turn it over to John, and it's a message that you've heard from our company many times, but particularly important this holiday season. CFO, as a member of AT&T, I want every dollar of revenue we can get, except for a dollar of revenue that's associated with you texting and driving. Every year there's over 100,000 accidents where distracted drivers either injure or kill themselves, their passengers, or a pedestrian. We don't need that. None of us need that. So please, your text can wait. Don't text and drive. Keep yourself, your family, and quite frankly, my family and friends safe. We'd appreciate it. With that, John, I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay. Thanks for those comments, John. A lot to chew on.
Yep.
I think we can dig into each one of those. Why don't we start with some of the comments on the competitive environment.
Yep.
You mentioned churn would be in the fourth quarter above where it was last year. I believe last year you were at 1.1. So obviously we're looking a little bit higher than that. Can you talk a little about some of the drivers for that and how do you expect it to progress? I mean, is it the fact that carriers are paying early termination fees or new offers? What's really driving that?
There's a whole host of things that are impacting our business. In particular, one is this is the first year where a new Apple device has been out where all four carriers have access to it. So when the iPhone 5 came out, not all four carriers had access to it. And because of our large base, we face higher competition because of that. But we'll get through that as we have in the past. We've been through this process before. Two, there are a lot of promotions out there, and they are driving activity. But those promotions are just that. They're promotions. And so as they drop off, we'll see things return to more normal levels. And then, quite frankly, this is a holiday season. This is a season where we normally see churn tick up. If you look back in our history, our fourth quarter is seasonally a little bit higher churn. So it's all of those matters. None of those give us significant pause or concern for the long term. It's just something that we need to continue to work through. And quite frankly, the one issue that I will really point out here is once you get past the promotions, the phone's got to work, the service has got to be great, you got to have a great network. And we feel really good about our network, and we believe that as customers experience differences between ours and others' networks, they'll be more than willing to, as they have all year long, vote to stay with us and come back to us and continue to grow our customer base.
But given the upward pressure we're seeing in the fourth quarter here, I mean, does it, and the competitive, doesn't look like, it's hard to tell, but it doesn't look like the competitive intensity is getting any lower. I mean, does this suggest that sort of 15 you might see higher churn than 14, especially you got some benefit in 14 from the next, the movement to next and the pre-nexters? how can you sort of, can you weigh the two of those impacts as we look out in 2015?
Yeah, let me give you this kind of point too, John. If we step back and look at the full year, our churn's going to be one of the best years ever, right? Those are my comments included.
Yep.
So in all this noise and all these promotional offers and all these offers to pay termination fees and other things, all this stuff going on, we're having one of, if not our best year ever for churn. So I feel good about that, and it reinforces our belief that quality service and a quality network are really what's important. As we go through the mobile share value and people upgrading their equipment, we've had great response to the next program as customers are coming in and buying their next piece of equipment. And it's worked really well. We've been pleased that the customers' actions have met or exceeded our expectations with regard to adopting the next program.
Again, then switching over to margins, looks like there's some added pressure here in 4Q. Can you talk again about the individual drivers? Obviously, competition, but go into the piece parts that's putting pressure on margins.
Well, the first one I'll point out is customer additions are going to be up, both total and postpaid, and with growth comes some costs.
Right.
And when you're putting new devices out, whether they be connecting cars or other connected devices, or whether you're selling smartphones or tablets. Generally speaking, those can put some pressure on margins. But that's a good pressure. That gives us the opportunity for future growth. That's the first piece of it. Secondly, as churn goes up, there's some pressure there, and some of the promotions that we've done, although somewhat more limited than most of the folks in the marketplace, have provided some pressure. But really the growth, with that growth comes some pressure, and that's pressure that certainly a company with our health, our balance sheet, we can certainly make those investments.
You mentioned pricing. Verizon cut prices with a new promotion November 1st. We've seen Sprint answer that a few weeks later with a cut your bill in half. Does AT&T have the right pricing in the market given what the competitive intensity of the industry?
Yeah, well, I mean, we really do believe we've got the right package for customers, and we feel good about that. As I say, we're going to focus a lot of our competitive activity on customer service and quality of network. I will point out to you the key word that you mentioned, John, and that is these are promos.
Right.
There's a lot of noise, and there's a lot of headlines, but they're promos. And I think as you've seen from some of the articles that have been written, behind the details, behind some of the promos, buying new equipment, turning in your old equipment, signing new long-term contracts, not being able to change your data buckets over time, provide a lot of restrictions that once you start peeling it back, can offset some of the noise around the promotional announcements.
And then on installment plans, you guys moved a big chunk of your base over to no subsidy plans here in 2014. Has that been as effective as you had hoped in terms of reducing churn? And what can we expect as we look out into 2015?
You're reading every day, you're seeing pricing, competition, you're
right.
Seeing promos. The marketplace is very, very competitive, and our churn's going to be one of our best, if not our best year ever. I don't mean to be flippant in any way, shape, or form, but the numbers are working. The strategy is working. It's a long-term strategy. Customers often hold their phones for 2 years, 2.5, maybe 3 years. So this cycle of going through a complete cycle of next is going to be a 2 to 3 year cycle. And we're just through the, first 11 months of it. But it certainly seems like it was the right strategy and that it's working. We're going to stay on it. We're going to watch it carefully. But we are encouraged by the results we've had so far.
And as we look out to 2015, more of the same, we're going to expect a larger percentage of the base moved over to these no subsidies. So
I'll say it this way, John, because we made a decision early in the year to treat our best customers up front and give them the opportunity to go into mobile share value plans right away, we've got more participants in mobile share value that had upgraded their phones in next. So what you'll see next year in 2015 is that we'll see those customers getting their new phones on the next plans. And the ones that have upgraded to the mobile share value early as they've come through this year, it's been dramatic how many have taken Next. It's been very few. So I'd expect us to see that get more in line, more in balance, where the number of customers who are actually on our equipment installment plans being much closer to the number of customers on our mobile share value plans. We did that intentionally. We wanted to treat our best customers as in the same manner as we're treating a brand new customer. That was a decision we made, and I think it was the right one. But we will see those equipment numbers catch up with the mobile share value numbers.
Gotcha. Now, maybe we can dig into net adds a little bit. As you mentioned, really, I'm thinking four categories: handsets, tablets, but then connected car and digital life, which in one shape or form are wireless. First, when you say net adds, how should we think of the mix between handsets and tablets as we look in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, we're not giving any guidance in the fourth quarter. I'll look back to you in the third and in the prior quarters of this year. If you see, we've added 3 million postpaid customers to that mix, and a significant number of them have been phones. It hasn't all been tablets or other devices. So you can go back and look at our records, but we've gone from 72 million at the beginning of the year to 75 million postpaid customers and a significant number of phones. If you look at our total number of customers, you've seen a big pickup in connected devices. And that's really, in the third quarter, really took a step up significantly in connected cars, 500,000 net adds in the third quarter, 2 million in total in service. And as more cars roll off the assembly lines, we're going to sell more of those. So we are optimistic about how that goes in the fourth quarter and throughout. But we are seeing a continued pickup in smartphones and postpaid devices. I think our smartphone number is up 5 million as of September 30th. So not only are the phones we've added, but we've converted a whole lot of feature phones to smartphones. That base is over 80% now. Flow share is about 90% at the end of the third quarter. So point being, making the smartphone the center of a customer's relationship with us, putting a mobile share value plan where it's easy to add tablets and other devices, connected cars, other things, seems to be a plan that works, and allowing them to buy buckets to cover their whole family and all their uses seems to be the right approach. And so we're gonna hang with it.
And then maybe lastly on the sub side, digital life, it's starting to scale. Can you give us a sense of where the business is and
yeah,
how
we had 140,000 customers at the end of the third quarter. We announced that we're not going to be giving customer counts on a kind of a monthly or a quarterly basis because we want to grow that business carefully. We are working hard to get it to scale, but as of now, it is not the driver in and of itself of our customer counts, of our postpaid net adds. It's really just part of the future, part of the opportunities we're trying to develop as we go forward.
Gotcha. Maybe switching over to wireline. You've seen some margin pressure, but at the same time, cutting CapEx maybe alleviate some of that. When can we expect wireline margins to bottom?
Well, we're still sticking with what we said back when we announced VIP, and that once we get past the VIP cycle, we would expect margins to start to improve and see those in the 16-17 time frame. I will tell you, though, that your point is well made. When you do a CapEx project, you can have a variety of trailing expenses. If you've got to build a network build, your trailing expense might be 10% as an example. If you've got a software project, your trailing expenses associated with that CapEx spend could be 30, 40, or even 50%, depending upon the projects. So as you adjust your CapEx, you also give you a chance to adjust your trailing expense. And as you adjust that trailing expense, you'll see some improvements and some opportunities anyway for us to improve margins.
And then I think U-verse has been another driver of incremental costs. Obviously, a lot of incremental growth, incremental costs, given the growth that you have had in the business. Given the footprint and the 57 million total locations, I mean, how much growth is left in that platform?
A couple of things. One, when you take a business from zero to $15 billion in 7 years, you're going to have some expenses to grow it.
Yeah.
I will tell you, the team has done a great job in building that business and has proven that we can take a business from start and really dramatically grow it. With that, we have just under 30 million, about 28 million households passed that have U-verse capability, and we've sold into around six. Those are the kind of numbers you can talk about and the penetration opportunity you can talk about. Once we get the DTV deal done, we'll talk about where we're going to go in the future, and how we're going to go about that. It's premature to do that now.
Got you. Another potentially big mover from a wireline margin standpoint is the movement to an all-IP infrastructure. Could you talk about your progress there and what could be the sort of broader cost savings as a result of this over time?
You're seeing some of the cost savings in the software-defined networks in our CapEx. Part of what we're seeing in the CapEx is an acceleration of the savings in software-defined networks. There's still room to grow. We still hope for improvement, but you've seen some of our announcements with some of our vendors signing up and joining us in partnership to do more in the software-defined network area. You're seeing some of that. If you think about just any aspect of our business, for example, our tower operations and our antennas on our towers, the ability to turn those into software controlled and be able to adjust those without sending someone up to climb the pole or climb the tower, that's a much more cost-efficient base. If you think about having a software-enabled network for our customers, so like we're doing in Austin with one of our major customers down there, where they can get on their computer system and order their speeds. They want to ramp up their capacity, they ramp it up, and it's instantly deployed. We don't have to roll trucks. We don't have to send out repairs. Cycle times are very short. As we're going through and testing these kinds of activities, you'll continue to see us improve. It's a long process. We're a large company, but we are making significant progress on it, and that's why we've continued to invest, and that's why getting the fiber out into the network is so important, because the fiber enables that.
Got you. You brought up CapEx there. Obviously, that's also in your opening remarks, the move from $21 billion this year to $18 billion next year. It's a sizable cut. Two things. One, is there a risk that you may be underspending on the wireless side?
No, John, we're going to spend, in the course of this conversation, we'll spend $2 million on CapEx. $50 million a day, every day of every week, of every month, of every year. It's $1.5 billion a month. We're going to be the leading investor in the United States, I bet, with $18 billion of investment in capital in the U.S. I'm sensitive, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
You've been talking to my network guys. You've been talking to some of my business unit partners. I don't view it as a cut. I view it as an adjustment to more normal levels.
Okay.
Quite frankly, my network team, they just did a really great job in getting 300 million POPs covered in less than 2 years, and they did a great job in getting 57 million locations with high-speed broadband completed in less than 2 years. They got the job done, so it's time to adjust.
This is a normalized level that we should be thinking about going forward.
Yeah. We think about it from a 15% of kind of a 14, 16, but I often say 15% of revenues. In this case, it's about 15% of our service revenues.
How does Gigapower fit into that on the wireline side? Is there room in that $18 billion budget to continue to expand into attractive areas with that product?
Yes, absolutely. Let me make a couple of things real clear. On the Gigapower, we made some announcements with regard to VIP and with regard to Gigapower before the DTV deal. When we announced the DTV deal, we announced that we'd do another 15 million enhanced or expanded broadband footprint to bring us up to close to 70, in the 70 million range of locations. We made that commitment with the DTV deal on top of what we had already said publicly. Everything we'd said before that became part of the DTV deal commitment, and so we are committed to doing those, and inclusive of that is a lot of Gigapower activity. Now, what normally would happen is once you go into a city and build out a core, you would then go back and build out more and more and add to it. We're pausing on that second step. We're pausing until we see more about Title II and how the regulation's going to go. we're going to have to look to see what we're going to do. But in the CapEx budget and in our build plans are to satisfy those merger commitments. Pretty simply put, we made a promise and we're going to keep it. You've heard me say this before, John, it's kind of like our pension plan. You know, a couple years ago we went to an extensive effort to fund it with $10 billion, and in the last two and a half years it's been $10 billion. We made promises, we work really hard to keep them, and that's what we're doing here, just like with our pension plan.
Gotcha. You brought up the DirecTV deal, if we could sort of go in that direction for a little bit. First of all, there's been a lot of changes in announcements with HBO and CBS, and we've heard a lot about over the top in the advertising market. Talk about your video strategy, both on the fixed side and the and on the mobile side as well, and how does DirecTV sort of get you, you know, further down the road there?
So the first point, and maybe it's obvious, but I'll be repetitive, I guess. When we complete the DTV transaction, the two entities together will have over 26, 27 million, whatever the number is going to be, video customers. That's going to give us scale. And that alone will give us the opportunity to really improve margins on our wireline business, because we do not have scale today on our content purchasing. So that's it'll take some time, and we'll work with the content guys, but quite frankly, the buying capacity of DTV today is better than ours, and the pricing's better, and as we migrate to that pricing scale, we'll have improvement in margins. That's the first. The second item is then we're going to be a scale customer or business partner of the content guys. We're going to be buying subscriptions for 27 million U.S. households, but we're also going to be the partner who brings with them 100 million potential mobility customers and a potential for 70 million broadband customers that we only sell 6 million video to today. So huge opportunity for the content guys to work with one of their biggest customers on expanding how they distribute and getting a chance to figure out ways to monetize to everybody's benefit and the customer's benefit all this capacity to distribute. We're going to be unique in that. We're going to be the only ones who are going to say, we're at the table buying significant amounts of your services today. We have the capability to provide you an outlet of 100 million wireless customers, and with our 300 million LTE POPs, we got the capacity to deliver really high-quality video. And third, we're going to have 70 million broadband, either wired or fixed wireless local loop distribution opportunities. So if you want to sell a different way on a non-subscription basis, we're going to have that too. So I think we could be a very good partner for the content guys in providing really effective, cost-effective solutions for consumers, and we can bundle things that consumers can't get bundled today. So we're pretty excited about the opportunity. DTV is a really well-run company. They got some really good people that are going to be a great addition to our team.
If we can go a little further on the wireless side as it relates to video, you guys have spent some money to develop a multicast network. Mm-hmm. Could you talk about how multicast sort of fits into the puzzle? I know you really can't talk too much about spectrum, but is the WCS, is the WCS ecosystem coming along as you expect, and is that going to be a part of the sort of mobile video opportunity?
Yeah, I'll directly avoid the spectrum question. But with regard to multicast and simulcast, we clearly believe, as I just mentioned, with regard to talking about the content guys, that the distribution of video over the wireless network is going to be a really important item. Whether it be in TV programming, movies, whether it's being FaceTime and videos, or whether it be, you know, sporting events or live TV. We're building a network that is video-centric, and it has that capability and capacity to do that. We feel really fortunate that we're going to have extensive capacity to backhaul traffic on a wired network where customers don't really care how it gets to them, and we're going to be able to be agnostic about whether we carry it on our wired or our wireless networks. With regard to the multicast, we are in the process of developing that. I will tell you the handset eco structure has to catch up. This isn't something that every handset that's out in this audience today has the capability to do that. We do deliver video, in quite frankly, in our UVerse package. We can deliver video to your tablet, to your phone. We do that today. On a very large basis, we will move towards a more developed multicast process as the ecosystem
around and develops, but we're clearly on that path. We've built a video-centric network, both on the wired and the wireless side, and that'll give us a real advantage as we compete to deliver this massive amount of data that continues to grow.
Right. Along with the DIRECTV deal, you will inherit a lot of assets in Latin America. And then you followed that acquisition up with the IUSASEL deal. Can you talk about Latin America as a place to do business, both from a video standpoint and a wireless standpoint?
So, the DIRECTV deal was just an extraordinary deal for us in the sense of giving us a national footprint for video to match our national footprint for wireless, to match what's going to be a near national footprint for broadband. So it allows us to really get outside the kind of 21-state perspective and be a national company. It came with some really interesting assets in Mexico and in Latin America. And we're excited about those, but the focus of our DIRECTV was first that U.S. base, the content cost savings, the ability to get that quality employee base and the technology they had. With regard to specifically the opportunities in Mexico and IUSASEL, it's a growing economy, a growing middle class. It's the third largest trading partner. It abuts the U.S. border, so it provides an opportunity for a seamless network experience. But most importantly, it provides a 400 million customer calling area. And when you think about the demographics of the United States, if you think about the trading activity and the economic activities going on between us and Mexico, it's a natural for us. When you think about the assets we have and or the customers we have that are both postpaid, but also the Cricket customers, and the ability to sell and allow those customers to call on that. You know, when I lived in San Antonio, when I used to call my home in St. Louis, that was an on-net call. When my neighbors in San Antonio would call home to Monterrey or Mexico City, it wasn't an on-net call. Now it will be. Additionally, it's a very beginning stages of mobile broadband development in Mexico. A lot of 2G networks, some 3G, but not a lot of to speak of LTE networks, and certainly not the penetration. They have about smartphone penetration is about half what it is in the United States. And the development of the wired business is not in the same level as it was here in the United States. So customers are reaching out for mobility, connectivity, and communication services. So we really believe we're getting in at the right time. With all that other, everything else being said, the government's made some significant moves, and I would suggest to you, probably moves that you can't find made by any other government down there, to open up the markets, to encourage foreign investment, encourage people to come in, not only in the telecom industry, but in the finance industry and the energy industry, things that bode well for the growth of the overall economy. And when the overall economy is growing fast, you know, it gives us a great opportunity to grow our business really well. It's a business we know, but I think those kinds of characteristics, I'll leave it to your guys' judgment. I think those characteristics are pretty unique to Mexico right now.
And then from a, you know, IUSASEL standpoint, is there what kind of level of investment do you expect it to need going forward to get those assets to the AT&T standard?
Yeah, I think it'll, we haven't given any guidance on that, and I won't today. It won't be overnight by any stretch.
Right, right.
I will tell you, though, we think the IUSASEL assets in and of themselves, they cover, you know, the vast majority of the country, so they give us an opportunity to build a network as a standalone set of assets to incorporate into our network here in the United States, and give us a real opportunity to build that.
Gotcha.
So we feel very positive, very optimistic about it. When we close the deal, which we'd hope to have closed, I think we publicly said by the end of the first quarter. We hope to have it closed by the end of the first quarter. When that comes out, we'll do our best to give you some insights into those plans.
Yeah, and I have to ask, you know, there's a lot of talk about other assets in Mexico for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Amex likely to carve out a piece, Nextel International. I mean, any of those other assets look attractive to AT&T?
Outside of Mexico, I'm not sure there's any country that has the characteristics of what the government's done to open up investment, to encourage the economy, to deregulate, to change the environment. I'm not sure any other country's done that, so I'd leave it to you all to find out if any have, but I'm not aware of any. With regard to the American Mobile assets, I'm not really sure what they're selling yet, and I'm not sure whether there's been any determination by the government that what they might want to sell will pass muster for the regulatory concerns they're facing. So until that happens, there's really, I don't think, much to comment on. I will harken back to my comments on USASEL, though, and we think we've got the base of assets we need to compete in Mexico with or without any additional purchases.
Gotcha. With the DirecTV deal and the USASEL deal, and then you mentioned in your opening comments about the increase in leverage for the overall company.
Right.
You guys said what's the max leverage that the company is comfortable with?
Yeah, we haven't gone that, and we won't go there. We're certainly comfortable with the leverage that we'll have after those two deals.
Okay.
What I will say is this is, we're at the 1.8, and today's current interest rate environment, our interest costs, which are on an overall debt portfolio, our average interest cost on a long-term portfolio is about 2.8% after tax. So it's a pretty inexpensive debt level. We're real comfortable at the 1.8 range. With the opportunities we've had, we will, once those deals close, move above that for some period of time. And we've done this in the past when the opportunities became available to us and took those. But as you've seen us do in the past, we've come back down very effectively, focusing all our free cash flow over dividends to pay down debt and to get it back to that acceptable range, which in our case right now is the 1.8 net debt to EBITDA range. So you'll see us do that. That'll be our focus.
And you recently closed the sale of the Connecticut lines to Frontier.
Yes.
Is there any other assets, maybe other LEC lines, that could be divested to help you get to that target a little quicker?
Yeah, I won't speculate on any specific assets. I will tell you, we're a 135-year-old company. We were formed over the last, 30 years by the merger of 10 Fortune 50 companies. So while we've done the team's done a very good job of locating the towers and American Mobile stock and selling real estate and the Connecticut assets and selling our Yellow Page business and doing the strategic analysis, the portfolio analysis that's necessary to identify those, I don't want to, I certainly can't be smug about thinking that we're done. And there's always an opportunity to dig more. Whether it be some real estate, we're a very large real estate owner, whether it be other assets, we'll keep doing that and we'll keep working towards making sure that we have the, most balanced balance sheet where we have all our assets effectively working for our shareholders.
Gotcha. Now, quickly, a couple questions on cash, a couple cash items, and it wouldn't be a presentation with John.
We like cash.
I know. It wouldn't be a presentation with John Stevens without a quick question on taxes. Can you talk a little bit about, first of all, your view on tax reform, whether you think it's reasonable to expect tax reform in 15? And then I think the Senate is expected to vote on the one-year tax extenders retroactive to 14. What does that do for your cash flow and sort of what's your position on bonus appreciation?
So real quickly, I first of all recognize the fact that the House last week voted out a one-year extension really to 12/31/14, and we applaud and recognize that. It's at the Senate today. We're hopeful that we'll see a vote out this week, and we'd encourage the Senate to take that action to avoid a tax increase.
Right.
Because for many companies, virtually all companies, it will be a tax increase. With that being said, we're optimistic the president will sign it and that the White House will be supportive based on what we've read in the papers. With all that being said, that is a one-year extension through 12/31/14. So we view this as an opportunity to say, okay, the government, you've acted in a responsible way to get things taken care of through 14. Now let's go right to tax reform. I will tell you that I think from a finance perspective, if you've got a choice of investing in a place where somebody's going to take 25% of your profits or somebody's going to take 35 or 40% of profits, you're going to do it. If you live in New York, I think you're probably going to go over to New Jersey and buy gasoline over there because it's 50 cents a gallon cheaper because of the gasoline taxes. I think if you live in New York and you buy clothing, you're probably going to go over to New Jersey and buy it over there because there's no sales tax on clothing in New Jersey. people, businesses make decisions on economics. We are currently in an environment where we have a 35% federal rate, 5% various state rates, bringing us out of sync with the rest of the OECD countries, who average about 25%. If we were able to get a 25% rate, companies, I think, would be more than willing. Our company certainly would be willing to give up bonus depreciation, to give up accelerated depreciation, to give up many of the credits. Because as you balance that rate down, you then become more competitive. And when you become more competitive, particularly for a company like ours, people move their investments in the United States. And while those investments may not be all in telecom, those investments may be in energy or banking or retail or manufacturing. But when those companies bring their investments here, they'll generate jobs. And people with jobs are great customers for a company like ours to have. So that kind of balancing would be really important. Tax reform is the biggest job generator this country can find, because through tax balancing with the rest of the world, we'll increase investment, will increase spend, you know, investment in the United States, and that'll increase jobs. It's pretty much that easy. It really will work if they're just willing to do it. Everybody's going to have to give their tax benefits, their specialties up. We all know that. We're willing to do that just like everybody, you know, just like most of the other major companies I've talked to.
Gotcha. Maybe we'll just finish up here with my last question that dovetails with your comments on the business market. You know, what are you seeing from an economic standpoint, or any drivers out there that can help you accelerate what you're seeing in the enterprise market? And then conversely, if you could talk about the competitive environment in the small end of the business market.
The enterprise, the high end of the business, has been solid. People are willing to invest in efficiency. You know, our strategic services, they continue to grow in the 12, 13, 14% ranges, depending upon the month or the quarter. They continue to do well. Large companies want that efficiency, but they're very much interested in bundling what was once a really wired sale with now a wireless sale. They want to have the ability to have their employees connect through the cloud, into their information, into their data, into their offices, anywhere, anytime. So what we've seen is a real opportunity to combine those two, and it's gone well at the high end. At the low end of the business, we're still not seeing a great level of small business starts. While we are seeing small business very interested in broadband and very interested in mobility, we're not seeing significant growth in the small business market or small business starts. Unemployment rates coming down and job growth appears to be there, but we're also seeing the participation rate in the job market to be at historically lower levels. And so until we can get both of those, the participation rate going up and unemployment rate continuing to come down, we need something to generate investment in the business, in the economy of the United States.
Gotcha. Okay, that's all I have for now. We've got some microphones that can make their way. I think there's a question here in the middle.
Hi, thank you. Could you describe your M&A policy in the context of your business strategies going forward?
Well, let me say this. I think the first comment I'd make is, I hope you heard me on my guidance. Once we get the use to sell and the DirecTV deal closed, our focus of our free cash flow over dividends is going to be to get our debt levels back into traditional, what we call the 1.8 targeted range. So I'll leave it at that. That's the first thing. If you're looking at the strategy behind DirecTV, it's really we get a national video player, national wireless player, national broadband player, and scale in content that improves margins on our existing business but gives us flexibility to be a player in the very significant evolving mobile content, mobile video world. If you look at our international investment in USSL, you can say, look, it's a property, it's a geography. I'll go back this way. When Bell South and SBC first formed Singular, we essentially kind of took 20 states of operations and brought them together with another 20 states to form a national company.
what we're doing here is bringing the country of the United States and the country of Mexico and bringing it together to form a North American calling area. That's pretty easy strategy. It's got good quality regulatory reforms, good policies, and a great economic opportunity. I'll leave it at that with regard to no further. I don't want to get into any kind of speculation or anything else. Those deals make sense. Wireless, broadband, those have been our key things, and these fit. And this video opportunities, and in DTV particularly, we get a lot of really good technical capabilities that that entity has, and really good employees. So I don't want that to be lost. This is an opportunity for us to get some real skilled set people that are going to help our business.
Over here on the side.
Hi. Question about your CapEx and what areas you're reducing, what areas you're increasing, particularly in wireless. I understand that the LTE coverage is finished or nearly finished, but capacity, particularly in dense urban areas, sometimes is found wanting, at least by the folks I've talked to. Do you figure to spend more money on capacity where you already have coverage of LTE, or is that also an area where you think your network is adequate and you could enjoy cost reductions through reducing your CapEx?
Yeah, we're gonna continue to spend money on capacity. We understand them. As I said before, we believe in the value of the network. We understand the value of having a good network, and we sure in the heck want to do the best job we can at retaining that quality network. And with the data growth that we've been talking about on handsets being, 50% data usage growth year over year, those kinds of things, it's a natural that we'll continue to invest in capacity. You'll see us continue to invest in efficiency and opportunities to take costs out of the business, whether that be collapsing operating systems, whether it be operating our wireline network more efficiently. You'll see us continue to do that, and you'll see us continue to invest in success-based initiatives. So customers come to us and say, hey, we need broadband to these 20 locations. We're going to have the money there to make prudent investments to generate revenues and grow the business. But I will hearken back. I know the numbers coming from the 21 down to 18, and that sounds like a major move. But if you step back and say the 18 is still probably going to be, I would expect it's the largest investor in the U.S. market of any business, of any industry. It's a significant amount of money, and certainly is, in our opinion, adequate to make sure we keep our networks running at a very high level.
Okay, I think we have time for one final question here up front. Oh.
Can you quantify the savings that you expect from software-defined networking?
Could we quantify the savings we expect from software-defined network? No, we're not giving that information out, but I will give you a sense of it in this sense. If you can take layers of equipment, layers of boxes out of your network because they're software-controlled, if you can get customers to order products and services, change speeds, increase units on the Ethernet, increase speeds, whatever characteristic you want to use, and you can do that from a software-enabled, you can save truck rolls, you can save installation, you can save cycle times. And by the way, when you save cycle times, you don't really save any costs, but you generate a lot more revenue because customers don't have to wait 30 days to get the service turned on. They can get it turned on in, say, a day or two. And so all of those aspects, we haven't quantified it, but we're very optimistic about how it's going, and we've had good participation from a number of our vendors that have said we want to step up and participate. We are going through an overall process in our business. We're refreshing our balance sheet over the last 3 years, getting our pension plan funded, getting our debt refinanced, buying back our shares, changing things. We've gone through a tremendous effort to refresh our networks, LTE, high-speed broadband, fiber to the business. We're doing that. And now we're also, refreshing our operating systems and how we deliver the services. Those are going on now, and those will provide real opportunities for efficiency and margin improvement going forward. But in a company that's our size,
it does take some time. We're not very patient with it, but we're very pragmatic with it. And so the team's working very hard. It's going to take some time. We're a company of, 250,000 employees. They work really hard. We keep pushing them to move us forward.
I think that's all we have time for today. John, thank you very much for participating.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming.